Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Big Talk Small Computers. This is episode 37, and I am one of your guests, Richard Hughes. And tonight we have my favorite person in the whole wide world, Door-to-Door Geek.
Hey, Richard. How you doing, man? We have a couple other people on the show, too. This is beginning to be the holiday time of the year, so I think we're all getting a little bit giddy.
Or crazy.
Yeah, or broke.
Okay, you, man. Now I just say testify, yes, broke.
So we also have Brian with us tonight.
Hey, guys, how are you?
I got the wrong audio.
And we also have Eric.
Hey, Richard, what's happening?
On OSX.
It's all good. I understand you guys have something called cold going on.
Oh, man, it hurts. It's the wind and the cold. I think tomorrow is a high of single digits with a huge wind. It'll be like you walk outside and it's going to be a wind chill of like minus 20. Not good.
Yeah, I had the windows open today.
Yeah, I'll say I didn't have that. It was definitely cold. I mean, I'm not going to kid around. It was cold. I definitely had to have more than just a little jacket on. When I went to pick up my youngest from daycare, the daycare person kept saying to my kid, obviously, in front of me kind of thing, "Now, tomorrow morning, you're going to need a jacket and on. So, yeah, it's going to be around 22 degrees or less, it looks like, when I go to drop off my kid.
That would be balmy.
Speak for yourself. To me, that's frigid, dude. I'm in Maryland. Maryland has every climate except for desert. We have skiing. We have beaches. We have marsh. We have mountains. We have forest. We have plains. We have everything except for deserts.
Somehow I never went on a ski trip to Maryland. I don't know why.
I'm not going to say we have good mountains.
There's a mountain?
Oh, yeah. The Cumberland Gap, man. Everybody got mountains, man. But I'm not going to say we have great skiing, but we have skiing.
Yeah, we have skiing, too. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, that's kind of like skiing in North Carolina and Virginia.
Yeah, or West Virginia. Supposedly, in West Virginia, they actually have some good hills, supposedly. But of course, you know, you got to go to like Colorado or something. Utah, if you want the real ones.
Ah, you got to come to Massachusetts.
Ah, I thought we had to go there for chowder.
Last skiing I did, I think, was Brody, and I think that's closed for 10 or 15 years now.
Digital in our YouTube chat says we are having a heat wave, us host, because where he's at, right now it's -7 Fahrenheit.
Ooh, a heat wave.
All I got to say is cry me frickin' river. I worked 2 years at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. One morning it was minus 22 when I got up.
Nope, pass.
All right, I'm sorry, when I got in the car.
Yeah, it's 5 here right now, Fahrenheit.
Yeah, see, no. I'll pass for that. Okay, really quick, guys. We had an email come in, and the email actually came in from a guy who I know I talked with a bunch back in the days of Linux Basics. LinuxBasix, which I don't expect a lot of listeners to know what that is. That was an old website I had and a show I had, and it must have been now 5 years ago, I'm guessing. My sense of time really is maybe the worst of anyone you've ever heard speak in your life, but trust me, I'm pretty bad. But he sent an email, and it was a little bit of a longer email. Now, really quick Android tip. Long emails, mental state, a little bit of ADD going on here. Can't really read long emails. So what I did was on my phone, I loaded an application called Say It. Looks like a parrot in the icon, all one word, Say It. Mm-hmm. And I opened up the email and I shared it to Say It. And on my laptop, I opened up the email. So it's reading me the email at the same time I'm able to follow along the words on my laptop so I can really get this email and digest it. A couple of the things he said was basically, we mentioned the Raspberry Pi Alexa type solution called Adrian, I believe. And one of the things he said was basically, don't be fooled. All of these systems communicate with the cloud. Because I said how I like that you install it, you own it, you're the admin of it. He said, don't be fooled. All of these solutions talk to the cloud, aka none of your data you speak into these things are private. And I want to say he's absolutely right. And that's one of the things that I don't want to say I forgot, but at least if I can admin the device, I have some level of control over it, is what I'm trying to say. But any quote-unquote smart solution that you can ask random questions to, or anybody can ask random questions to, not just you, the owner, and get intelligent answers back, yes, is going to have to be connected to the cloud. He said for years, and I'm going to say at the least 6 years, I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take for us to get that kind of database and acumen processing power in our own house. But for right now, we do need outside servers to complete those tasks.
Mm. Well, wait, pretty much the only thing that may happen on the device, and I think this was with Google Now, that it wasn't even doing the D to A, or I'm sorry, A to D, the analog to digital conversion or on the device, that it was just sending the audio out, and then Google's server farm was processing it. And I think now some of the newer phones, or probably most of or all of the newer phones, do it on the phone.
Well, interesting. Eric had proof of it. There is a place right now you can go into your Google account and you can literally listen to everything you've ever said to your Google device.
Oh my gosh.
And things that you didn't mean to say to your Google device. If you have a Google Home sitting in your kitchen during a Thanksgiving party.
Right. But you have the right to delete that information, sure. though, which
yeah,
is good.
Yeah, you can delete it all.
But, yeah, and
but not from the NSA.
It was creepy exactly. to listen to, though.
Well, yeah. And here's the gimmick now, Eric. I'm pretty sure that's now why when you say the trigger word, and I'm almost liking saying the word trigger word, you can say the trigger word and it doesn't give you any feedback, any ping, any ding, any okay or anything. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, I don't think now they want you to know how many times they accidentally start listening.
Ouch.
Yeah.
But of course, that's just a conspiracy theorist in me coming in.
And it still will, out of nowhere, out of just nowhere, untriggered, will say, I don't know how to help you with that. And I don't know. My Google Home's been not performing well lately. Out of the box, the first week or so, it seemed pretty responsive. It seems like the microphones have not held up or something. I don't know. It doesn't listen. It doesn't hear as well as it used to already.
Hmm.
Well, it could just be they're selling
similar. You didn't marry it, did you?
good one.
No. But it could be. That was really good. It could be, to be honest, they're just selling more of them, quote unquote, than expected. And maybe their servers are overwhelmed. Devil's advocate.
That could be.
Yeah. You know, hey, but I did send this back to Jonas, the guy who sent me the email, saying this to me is right now the only solution that I know of that does not have to have direct communications with the cloud to do stuff. And it's line 315 in our notes. And I actually discovered this because of Hacker Public Radio, HPR, a podcast network that every day they basically let anybody publish anything that they want. And they let anybody publish anything that they want. One of the guys helping develop this did an episode, and it's called Blather. Okay, here's a couple key differences about Blather. And part of it I really love, and I want more, okay? Hypothetically, I right now, if I had a Google Home in my house, I would not tie any service to it that had any access to anything that could cost me money, okay?
Right.
Nor would I have it doing anything really truly secure, like unlocking my doors or anything to that degree, only because it doesn't need my voice. You know what I mean, I can get a Nigerian guy from work to come to my house and start saying stuff, and it will just start spending my money and unlocking my door and stuff. You know what I mean? And I don't want that. Blather, on the other hand, you literally have to train the device. Now, this was how we always used to do it back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
You would have to train the device in order to get it to understand what you're saying. So I like the fact that you have to train this device, which means it's now my device, which means if Richard comes in my house and starts barking commands, it ain't going to pay attention to it. You know, because it's not me. Some people see that as a downside. Some people see it as an upside. I'll just say it's a difference. The other thing is, this only can complete basically process type task that you program into it. Hypothetically, you want this to turn on your Hue lights. You have to go in and either download by hand or create by hand a Python script to receive your audio file, to receive your audio command, and process it into the actual act of turning on or off your Hue lights, which means you're not going to have the ability to say, okay, Harpo, who was the inventor of the Dyson Sphere? Or, you know, I mean, you can't ask those kinds of questions to it because it's not a task-driven thing. Blather is a task-driven voice automated system. In certain respect, I want Blather in my house more than I want an Alexa or a Google Home, but I know unique, I'll say, in that. And I'm part of the few.
Well, the customization would be huge for yourself, though. You could just say, and I said, let there be light, and then it is. Things like that. You know, you could scratch your own itch for whatever you want to do.
Well, see, I like it because then I can be more like a Starfleet captain. And I can literally say, computer, and then that can be the trigger word. Why? Because I'm programming it. I can say, computer, turn off kids' internet. And they can sit there with a look of horror on their face, knowing they can't say anything. They can't say a command to get it turned on. Only Dad has that power. Okay. So I am literally going to start looking at setting one of these things up because, A, there's no doubt it requires less hardware. You know what I mean? This is a Linux-based thing. It uses Python on the back end. All you need is a Qt for a GUI or a GTK, and then basically you do Python on the back end. And GStreamer, and you're basically
So you've got this running on a laptop or a desktop with a microphone hooked to it, and then somewhere on your Wi-Fi network?
The logic is you can basically have this running on anything Linux-based. Now, one thing the Alexa has going for it that this, I don't know how we could do it, is the higher-end Echo now, I believe, has 7 or 9 microphones on it. Jonas was the guy that told me that, which means it can do a good amount of noise cancellation. So it can hear you when it's not the ideal environment. This, I'm afraid, you're going to have a very ideal environment unless you can figure out how to set up multiple mics across the room and have some kind of noise cancellation going on. I don't know. But I'm going to look into it.
Unless you have one of those nice little Starfleet badges.
Oh, yeah.
I-0.
A comm badge.
Don't tempt me, Brian.
I-0. Yeah. Little battery pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a... NanoPi Neo, just rip off the Ethernet jack, and I'm kind of close to being there.
You solder that.
Yeah, I just rip off. Yeah, whatever.
Does it have, are there audio connections on it? Like audio in, audio out?
My logic is there's a whole bunch of pin holes, IOs. I guarantee you I can do one of them to a little mic. But I also have these really cheap USB mics.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Mm-hmm. Low profile USB mics.
Yeah, that are literally this. Smaller than almost any thumb drive you've seen.
Really?
Yeah. I'm right now holding up to the camera, Richard.
Those are good presents.
Yeah. I'm looking.
So, I mean, you know, that.
That works.
Then I'm there. Then I've seen a power source. Dilithium crystals, maybe. So, really, I mean, that's one of the things with all these AI home automation things. To me, there's now going to be two types. And it's almost like the Star Trek computer world versus the Star Wars computer world, how they're completely different. There's the system you can talk to with your voice to just do hard, basic tasks, or there's the one that requires no training where you can actually ask intuitive questions. Who directed Poltergeist? Or, you know, whatever. I mean, in inquisitive type voice systems. It's obvious the Google stuff is going to, and the Alexa stuff is only going to become more popular because they have major corporations behind them, pushing them.
Well, I was listening to a news clip earlier from, I think it was CNET, that Apple is going to be pushing their in-home voice automated system as well, too. And I got a strong feeling that if and when it does come out, it's going to be kind of like the smartwatches, you know? Here, I'm wearing a Moto 360, and all of a sudden, as soon as the Apple Watch comes out, oh, is that an Apple Watch? No.
yeah.
You know?
I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, well, I'll say the only thing that makes me happy is every step Apple has taken for the last 3 or 4 years just seems to be the wrong step. I mean, it took them 2 extra months to release stupid ear buds that basically I already have basically the same exact thing for a third of the price. There's no special sauce there, absolutely whatsoever. I just hope that if they do launch some kind of home assistant thing, it literally is like $500 and only the hipster rich bougie people spend money on it, and it will constantly tell them the wrong thing, and it will, you know, their timers will always be slow and all their food will burn.
I like how, but, you know, when you're doing dishes next to the Apple one, though, the speakers push water out. If you splash water on the top of it, it sprays it out the speaker holes on the bottom. That was pretty cool.
These things are only going to keep getting more and more and more and more and more popular just as time goes on. I don't even think we know what's going to quote unquote win yet. I will say one of them just, I thought, went completely open sourced. But I can't remember.
Didn't Alexa have something that it used to be you have to push a button, and they changed that, that you don't have to push a button anymore if you roll your own on a Pi?
Well, in to roll your own, you needed to sign up for an Amazon developer account, and the developer account agreement stipulated it could not be voice activated. I do think something changed partially because Amazon just teamed up or whatever and released a quote-unquote development board that you can connect to a Raspberry Pi that I do believe allows you to do the complete voice system, but I think right now you still have to have their board to do it. Not really sure with that.
Microsoft just said that they're coming out with one too that looks like the Echo.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's going to, you know.
See, I think competition's great, and I think let's just take a look at Pi development. You know, you had the Pi 1, and I don't know if it went 1B or 2 and then 2B. And they've been developing some great stuff. And I think a lot of the reason is just like in the computer world, when there were clones, you know, originally you had the IBM PC, you got it from IBM.
Yep.
And then was it Compaq was the first clone? And from there on, they had competition. And I think competition is a great thing. We have numerous different Pi devices, and I'm running N number of different Pi devices here at home. And some have SATA ports, some don't have SATA ports, some have, you know, no built-on onboard networking that I soldered a hub to, and now I'm going to use it for something. But I think they all have a place and a reason to be and exist. And the competition is good. I guess the other thing is, and I've probably cursed it many times, I bought TCP connected lighting, and pretty much the company's out of business. And so now I've got to roll my own. And one of the things that I'd appreciate, I know Pogo Plug, which I used to talk a lot about, which I don't even use anymore, they said they escrowed their software, so if they ever went out of business, you'd have access, or, you know, it would be released.
Right.
Which I think that's a great concept, that if TCP connected lighting, you know, whatever, they're not, I don't know that they went out of business per se, or they're not supporting smart devices anymore, but their web that gave you IFTTT connectivity and scheduling is no longer online. And a while back, they were supported by Wink. There was cross support, and then that got dropped. But yeah, that's why I hate stuff that goes off my network, because then I'm not in control. If I'm in complete control, then I can do whatever I want with it. So yeah, competition good. When you buy into the device that fails out, like what was it, the Zune?
And I had a numerous.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, then that's no good. And it's bad for the consumer when you buy in, when you're an early adopter of a product that ends up orphaned. That's bad.
Right. Yeah. Right. Now, if you guys take a look at line 319 in the notes, I did bookmark it and I forgot. It's Conextant is the company that released, with Amazon's cooperation, a Alexa voice service development kit for the Raspberry Pi 3. It does have two mic inputs, or two audio mic inputs, so you can get that, you know, noise cancellation effect. The bad thing is the board is $299, and it's not including the Raspberry Pi.
That's a no-go.
And if you take a look at the board, it is gigantic compared to the Raspberry Pi. So then the question becomes, what is this board doing that is so special?
I bet it's doing the analog to digital. That's easy. I mean, you can do that on a chip, but it's got to have some digital signal processing going on there also.
Because
it can't just be an amp for a microphone or two microphones.
I agree, because it's way too big. Now, it does have more ports than that. I'll say, quote unquote, clearly has more ports than that on it. I don't know what you can do on this device that you couldn't do on a much less device as a developer that's worthwhile. I mean, I don't understand why a developer would have to buy this board, because Alexa, I mean, Echo, they're the only people that sell this product. Nobody else does. So I don't know who the hell would else need a developer board, unless they're going to literally let other people make official Amazon Alexa type devices. I don't know.
Maybe those are leftover 56K modem boards.
I don't know, but it's just gigantic is all I know. It's unbelievable. But, and again, $299. So, I don't know.
That's a bit steep.
I guess on the bright side, they're trying to do something.
Yeah, it's a start. Everything starts big and then it gets smaller.
Well, not everything.
Most computer stuff, though.
Yeah. Okay. I'm too distracted already. My question is, this is the quote-unquote holiday time of year. What I'm going to ask you guys is, if there's anything else in the notes you want to talk about, let's talk about that. But let's think about the quote-unquote mini PC computer of the year, if you want. Like, what was the best thing in the whole year that you guys saw that you thought was cool? And what is, like, the one gift you guys could get right now that you would like or give that you would like either for gaming, for home automation, or for anything?
Who's going first?
Hold on. While people think, the first thing I want to mention is, Rich, I'm talking to you again, line 318. I saw this, and I immediately...
you sent me the link earlier.
Yeah. So it's basically like the upboard. Somebody basically took the upboard, and they're building a Linux-ready gateway based upon the first upboard. Now,
so it's upboard in a case.
It's upboard in a case, and because it only has one port, I don't like making a network gateway with one port, because that means you're in and out or going over the same port.
That's over the same hardware, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but, so I don't like that. I don't like the idea of that at all. But somebody's doing it. I'll just say good for them. I wish them all the luck in the world. I hope they work really well, and I hope when the upboard square comes out, they immediately capitalize on it and sell one of them as well. It's just cool hardware. That's all I got to say. Just cool hardware.
So that dovetails into my favorite mini PC buy of the year. I got three, but the one that's a true mini PC is the upboard. And basically, like I said earlier in the pre-show, I haven't had my PC on my mini tower that I run on my desktop. It's from 2009. I haven't had it on in a couple of months, and more so because I've had the upboard running basically as my thin client. And definitely the upboard is my favorite mini PC. I did go on the Kickstarter and I got bought into the upboard squared. So the first level of 8 gig upboards with the, what is it, the something lake, Apollo Lake processor. Yeah. So the Apollo Lake processor, and it's got 64 gigs of eMMC on board, and, which I really didn't care about, but that's fine. That's okay. And actually, Dor and I have been chatting, not that we don't chat every day, but we've been chatting, and one of the things that I found out, he sent me a Banana Pi M3, the octa-core, and I was just looking at the product page, and it said there's eMMC on board, there's 8 gigs. And sure enough, there was, you know, if you do an FDISC, is it FDISC.L or
yeah.
FDISC.L? -L, sorry. And I'm like, holy crap, it's there. Mm. And I'm like, well, if I want to back up my config, where can I save it to? I'm like, ooh, it's already on the micro SD card. I could back it up to that. But probably my other fun things and something I may want to get for myself, because I already bought myself an upboard squared, which I'll get sometime in April, I guess, is I think I may retire my desktop completely and get a i5 Nook, you know, a 6th-gen i5 Nook, as my new desktop. And it has two mini DVI ports on the back, which I can plug video cables into my two desktop monitors. And that would be, now is it a gift for yourself or is it a gift for somebody else? What's the qualification here?
I'll say either or, because if you already have it, you know, you don't need it, but somebody else might find it useful.
Because my wife has a carry permit, and if I bought her a mini PC, I think I'd be on the bad end of that.
Ah. Gotcha. And I'll say one of the things that you didn't say, but about the upboard that I didn't think about and was one of your hangups, because you mentioned you wanted the other one for the two DVI outs, is that the upboard only has one HDMI out.
Correct. And the audio's on that.
Right. And the audio's on that. And I don't believe there's any natural way to take one HDMI coming out of a computer and split it to two different monitor outputs. You literally need multiple outputs.
if that was the case, the up the not the up squared but the original upboard would be a keeper for me. 4 gigs of RAM allows me to do thin client stuff. I could I've got my vCenter in a Nook or dual Nook vCenter, and I could spin up any OS I want and just connect to it from it. So that would be complete slam dunk.
Yeah, I'll say if there's a way to do, and I think there is, I think there is a way to do a monitor over USB 3.
And it has OTG USB 3.
Right, which is, I mean, it's technically, it's not, here's this gimmick. I don't know if it means that it's not USB 3 because it's USB 3 OTG, but it has that. So that might be one way you could possibly get the multi-monitor support.
Right.
There is other quote-unquote ports on it, but I believe it's more like a camera port, a camera ribbon cable connector, thing like that. I know. And that was one of the things. Once you said it, I said, yeah, it really would be nice to do multiple monitors over it.
Yeah, there's no mini PCI or PCI Express on the board. I think the Upboard Squared has a PCI Express port on it.
Yep.
And so did you go for the Upboard Squared door?
The one I want is, I believe, like just over $200 US.
Plus shipping.
Plus shipping. I don't care about shipping. It's 16 days to go. I honestly don't think, well, 16 days. Oh, man, that's cutting it really close. No comment.
You're on the fence.
I'm on the fence. Because I will say, the dream machine, this is the kind of thing, the dual gigabit NIC, to me, is one of the biggest selling features on that device. Because that means I can literally bond them together and get crazy network speeds, or I can literally use it as a bona fide, genuine hardware
gateway
gateway or like firewall. ITM or firewall or whatever. I mean, you know, and with the better processor, because you can get the Apollo Lake processor or the lower end Celeron. Of course, you gotta get the Apollo Lake. I mean, it's like Apollo Creed, but only in processor form.
I don't think the dollar difference justifies going Celeron.
I agree. I think the only reason to go Celeron is literally you just can't scrape the money up. Yeah, you should do everything in your power.
And I would say just don't eat for a week.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, this is really cool, I will say. And yeah, that was one thing I did like about the Upboard Squared. It had a little bit more ports, a little bit more functionality built into it.
I would say if I had my choice for something coming up, it would be to get rid of one of these desktops. All the desktops I have in here are Vista era. I mean, one of them's an i7, but it is the very first gen.
I gotta say this before you go any further. People, don't tell me, don't complain to me about this. I do send him money.
Okay?
I do send him money. It isn't like, you know, he's a starving podcaster.
Right, but I think, and they're huge. They're huge. They're large computers that were built for gaming at the time, and like a Zotac or a Nook, which would be every bit of the power I think that I have with what I have, but without the power consumption and the size on the desk or under the desk or wherever it's at.
Well, for me, it's my 2009 PC is just not useful anymore. And the other thing is the heat and the noise. I don't want the heat. I don't want the noise. And I'm sure the power is a big part of it too.
Yeah, I mean these are high. They're XPS, Gateway FX. They get really quiet fans. You know, they're not noisy. I've got good power supplies in them that are quiet. But they're just. And honestly, I'm podcasting on this one now, so it's still useful in my book. And if I need to clone a hard drive or something, it's good to fire one up to do that, things like that.
Yeah, I'll say I'm not against a desktop, but like right now, what I'm running off right now, I used to be running off my Zotac when I was doing these podcasts. Well, now I'm not. Now I'm running off my Lenovo ThinkPad T40, literally like a 6-year-old laptop in a third generation dock, ThinkPad dock, shoved underneath everything. To the monitor, to the camera, to the USB audio interface, to the keyboard, to the mouse, to everything else. 16 gig of RAM, third generation i5 processor, aka power hungry processor. Sucks down the battery like it's ridiculous. And it's running just fine to do podcasting. Podcasting isn't really a, you know, taxing thing anymore.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. When I'm on the road, I have a nice laptop. Not as nice as the one Dora just described, but I can podcast. It's an i5 HP laptop, a touchscreen monitor. It's not like I haven't bought a computer in the last, 10 years or something, but and that works just fine for when I'm on the road.
Right. Well, let's bring it back to the holiday gift stuff, because Richard said Upboard. Is there anything other hardware-wise you'd like to say, Rich?
Well, all right, so the Upboard, original Upboard, was probably the best thing I got this year, because it's just surprising how useful it is. The two things, I got the i5 Nook, which with 32 gigs of RAM, and I got a Celeron Nook, which is my data store for my vCenter. Those things work great, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I was overly impressed. No, I knew exactly what I was getting, and they work great. Just, it wasn't a surprise. So, the best mini PC I got was the Upboard, and the thing I might get for myself is another i5 Nook with 32 gigs of RAM as a, I would say thin client, but, desktop replacement.
Gotcha. Eric, do you have anything?
No, like I said, Zotac or a NUC-sized desktop replacement computer.
Gotcha. Nice. Brian?
Well, I don't really need any replacement PCs. I have a Core i7 laptop that I use for podcasting. I actually had to reinstall the OS a little while ago. But when I do need computers, I generally go down to the consignment store and build my own computer based on whatever they have down there. And I try not to break the bank too much, maybe spend a little over $200, for a decent machine. But I am looking at this next cloud box, which I'd like to get for myself for Christmas.
Oh, wait, they had a product announcement today, right?
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I did not know that. What was the announcement about?
Yeah, I just remembered, so I'm looking it up now.
Oh, okay. Well, this is the 1 terabyte USB drive. It's got the box. We have the Raspberry Pi 2 or Raspberry Pi 3 in a nice little package where just you can put everything all together in a nice little box, and it just looks really, really slick, not too expensive. And I have a couple of Pis kicking around here. I'd like to set up a little drive space myself and the wife and the kids and so forth. I mean, we already have a NAS device, but I think something like this would be a little addition to what we currently have. And go ahead.
I was just looking at the picture of this, and it looks like what we were talking about on the last show, it looks like the hard drive in this is not a standard 1 terabyte, it's not a serial ATA interface at the end of it. It has like a kind of a prepared.
No.
It looks like the Western Digital Pi drive with it's got almost right. Reminds you of USB 3.
Well, it looks like it is a WD Labs drive in it.
Yeah, but if you look at the interface and how the SATA connections connect to this proprietary.
Well, not proprietary. It's a USB OTG. It looks exactly. I mean, it is. I'm pretty sure the own cloud, the Western Digital drive. They're just basically. Because it's basically the same code as OwnCloud, they're basically saying, well, now we're going to use it as our own. Because if you look at the nextcloud.com/box, and it's a Raspberry Pi, and it's a Western Digital WD Labs drive sitting in it, and it looks like the exact same USB OTG connector.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
The one thing that I will say that I like about this much more is it says right there, the box is hardware compatible with the Raspberry Pi 2 and 3 and the Odroid C2. So I like the fact that they're not just saying Raspberry Pi. They're actually saying you can use other hardware solutions if you want. So that's really cool. So they're partnering again with WD Labs and with Ubuntu Core, which I will say it's good for Ubuntu to do that because right now Raspbian rules everything about Pi stuff. So for Ubuntu to get their name in there, I think it's good for them as a company. I don't have a preference personally. On servers, I'm actually liking Debian just a little bit more, but that's just me. That's just, personal preference. Ubuntu works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really cool box. Now, I didn't see a price mentioned.
No, I'm trying to look for ways to buy it right now.
select your country, buy in the USA. And it looks like, once again, just like Richard was trying to click our link last week in the show, it looks like the link ain't working when you select your country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. I thought it was just me.
So, that's okay, I guess. Okay, well, that just means it's going to, that just means we're like beta, we're early.
Pricing.
Very cool. Well, this is really cool, I will say. And to be honest, to me, at least what I'm seeing now, I'm not seeing great pictures of it, but the, what I am seeing of it looks a hell of a lot better than the OwnCloud weird translucent fish-like thing that me and Eric are looking at there.
The Pied?
Not OwnCloud.
Oh, yeah.
The Western Digital?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one I got looks like a watermelon slicer or something. But they did have some. They do have a whole new set, series of better ones. But
yeah, that definitely looks cool. Very good find.
So what I'm gonna get my son this year for Christmas? He doesn't have a PC right now, and so I am going to get him the Byte Plus by Azul, and that's actually. I don't know if that's in the show notes. I think I talked about it a while back.
Okay. How's it spelled?
It is spelled
Azulle.
Yes, Azulle. It's a fanless mini PC, 1.8 gigahertz, 4 gigs of RAM, 32 gig storage, quad core processor, Cherry Trail processor. It's on Amazon right now for $189.
Okay. Oh, yeah. They got a couple of them. Oh. This was the one to me more like very small set-top box size, like a Intel NUC-ish.
Mm. Right. Yep. Fits in the palm of your hand. It's got USB 2, USB 3.0, HDMI.
Okay. So there's two of them I'm seeing on their website. There's the Quantum Byte fanless mini desktop and then the Byte Plus fanless mini desktop.
Yeah, the Byte Plus is their newer model. The Quantum is a generation behind, but it's still a pretty good mini PC.
Yeah.
I definitely got this in the cart, and I'm ordering it as we speak. Should be here before Christmas.
Very cool. Okay, I'll make sure these links are in the notes for everyone. The hardware, the only hardware I really want to, let's say, review is, like, to me, there's a couple things I think of, like, honorable mention this year in computing. One, the Raspberry Pi has been innovating and has been putting out new hardware. I still think they need to do a new Pi Zero and insanely boost the productions up, because it's ridiculous how hard it is to get them from some people in some areas of the world. But I really honestly love the bang for the buck factor of the chip or the Orange Pi 1. To me, they're similar price points, but they're used for two completely different things. The Orange Pi 1, bought a couple of them, $10, literally $10 from Hong Kong. I think it was like literally $3 shipping or something really low. Raspberry Pi form factor computer, 512 megs of RAM, but I swear mine, I was shocked at how quick that thing booted. And I was shocked at how much work I could get that little thing to do. If you just needed a computer, low power, to sit in the corner and do things on your network, it's really hard to pass up the Orange Pi 1. The best thing about the Orange Pi 1 is you literally just go on AliExpress, buy it, and you have it in less than 2 weeks. The chip is much more of a hacker-maker board with all the I.O. pins, very small footprint to be put inside of things. It doesn't, by its default, have a video out, even a digital video out. You got to get an analog video out with the baseboard unless you buy an add-on. So it's a little bit of a different beast kind of thing. But bang for the buck, it really, truly, in my mind, is really, really hard to beat the Orange Pi 1 for just basic computing. If you can use a Raspberry Pi, but you can't afford a Raspberry Pi, look at an Orange Pi 1, literally a third the price, and you can basically do all the same things, just slower. I will say that upboard, Richard, I got is the shocking hardware of the year. I am blissfully, blissfully shocked at how well that damn thing runs. it is, and all year when we first started this show, one of the words I would say every episode was desktop-like experience. You know, this gets close to being a desktop-like. This is almost desktop, all that kind of thing. This upboard is a desktop. It's not desktop-like. It is a desktop. It just works fantastic. And once I get the case from Richard, it'll be much more portable. safely, I'll say. Because right now I got to carry around the whole box, and then when I plug it up to the computer, wherever I go, it's sitting out exposed, which, you know, might get me some geek cred, but yeah, once I get it in a case, to me that gives it even more cred, because now I got 3D printer cred.
What color case you want?
Well, it's going to be blue, because that's what Richard has.
That looks good.
Well, that's what I printed it at.
Yeah.
I love the logo on the side. Nice job.
Yeah, I just downloaded it from their site, so that's nice. What it looks like. And Doors is cool. In a box in my car and ready to go to the post office. I went to the post office, I think it was Monday, and they were just packed. I was like, I looked at the parking lot, and I'm like, holy cow, that's a madhouse. I went like 2 o'clock. I figured I'd beat the rush. And I opened the door, I looked, I'm like, I just walked back out.
Right.
But Door, what are you doing with the upboard?
I literally take it back and forth to work every day. That's my personal computer while at work. I have it going to a 24-inch, I believe, inch monitor at work. And it looks purdy, is the only way I could put it. It looks purdy, even though it's literally like an 8-year-old monitor. And I have my Windows computer sitting there. And anything I have to do on the internet, literally, this is my logic. And some people at work laugh and think I'm just saying it because it's the right thing to say. No. When I'm at work, I'm running a Windows computer. I don't do anything on the internet with that computer that I don't absolutely have to do because it's a Windows computer. Anything on the internet, even my work research, I do on my Linux rig because I know it's completely safe. Okay. Also, it's wirelessly tethered back to my phone. So nothing's going over the job network. I'm not using their bandwidth whatsoever. There's no chance of me going to a website and getting anything on anything in this network. You know what I mean? Right. To me, it's a safety concern. The only time I then jump to my Windows computer is when I found something. I literally, verbatim, sit there, look at the one screen, and type in the URL. Mm-hmm. And I go directly there, kind of thing. I don't even Google search and then go. No, I just go to it. And it works unbelievably fast. It's painfully clear when I'm at work. The bottleneck on that upboard is my tethering, you know, is that network, because everything just runs fast. The boot speed is one of those things that Richard said, and I kind of believed him, but it is like literally 4 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. And like my Lenovo ThinkPad is like a minute and a half. I mean, seriously, it is literally like that. To me, like one of the most promising, and this is one of the things we've had now promises for over a year about mini computer, quote unquote, laptops. I got the Pi Top, $300. Listen, I'm not mad I gave them the money. I'm happy I supported them, but I will not give them any more money like this because that is way too much money for what it is. Okay. The battery's fantastic. The screen is decent. The keyboard is horrific. It's literally girthy. It is too big for what it is. I shouldn't have to put everything together for that price because literally I don't know what the hell I'm doing with electronics. And there was one part where it said, make sure when you do this, you don't do this first. Damn, it's easy for me to mess up, kind of thing. Then we've had a couple other things like the Next Book, which was a Kickstarter for a laptop form factor, plug it up to a Pi or a phone kind of thing, which had a huge fire. The shipment's not going well. We don't know if they're going to deliver or not. And now we have the Pine Book. And the Pine 64 is among my top boards of the year. The Pine A64 with 2 gigs of RAM, with Bluetooth and Wi-Fi on board, I'm getting great network speeds. I'm getting great Wi-Fi speeds. I'm getting great processor speeds. It is just running really good for literally, I think it was $28. You know, super hard to beat. The only downside about the Pine is the size of it, the board, the case availability. That's why I need a 3D printer. That's the logic, you know, because I have the Pine battery as well, but I need the 3D printer to, you know, cinch the deal. I need the case to make it fully useful and functional, but
Well, heck, I can print you one before I ship the stuff off to you.
No, just ship that stuff. That's okay. I have nothing but time on my hands. I shouldn't die for another 20 years, so we're good. But now I want to ask the stupidest question of all. The one thing that we can say with absolute certainty that none of us will get right, and that is, does anybody have any predictions for the world of mini computing in 2017?
A Pi 4?
Pi 4. That's an easy one.
That's an easy one.
And I do think before May we're going to have a new Pi.
a Pi 4 in a 64-bit operating system for the Pi 3 and up.
That would be nice.
Mm.
Eric?
Go to Brian. I'm thinking on this one.
Okay. Well, that's a good one, Dor. I'm going to say better software support, OS support for these single board PCs, like the Raspberry Pi. More mainstream, not so much behind closed doors kind of thing.
Right. I can tell you. Okay, I'm just going to go. Right,
I got one though. I think this is the year that Internet of Things and connecting your devices to your home, your switches and little things like that is going to get stupid easy.
You're going towards where I want to go. This is what I would like to have, okay? This is what I would like to see. Instead of having stupid things, incredibly stupid things like smart light bulbs, for the smart light bulb to be smart, it has to be on the whole time from the switch, which means you can only control it from the app. If anybody walks by and flicks a switch, it's no longer a smart light bulb. It's a stupid, useless light bulb, okay? And that's how a lot of the IoT thing works now. What I would like to see is, honestly, boards or components. Components is the word I'm going to use. Components smaller than a NanoPi Neo, a.k.a. postage stamp size, that you can basically put in the wall, put inside of your electronic outlets. You open up your outlet, you replace your outlet with this smart outlet, and it meshes, mesh network over your house kind of thing. To then where you can have a Pi-type device, a small computing device, you just plug into one outlet, and then that becomes your quote-unquote smart home. The whole thing is, though, just like Brian said, it's going to need near-intuitive software for any kind of success, period. Without really sharp, really polished, really intuitive type software, it's all going to be useless. And it's going to have to literally be the kind of thing is when you're done getting it set up, it literally puts you through a wizard. And it literally says, make sure no life support or kinds of systems are connected to any of these devices right now. And then it's literally going to say, now I'm going to switch this thing on and off. Give this a label, kitchen north wall, living room south wall, oldest son's room TV. And you can give everything a label of that hub, because there's no way it's going to be able to intelligently do any of that kind of thing. So that first time setup is key. I want to see more embedded is the word I look at it. Embedded IoT type things. But at the same time, I don't want every single one of those damn things require some kind of internet account, login, and access to the internet. Because
I agree.
Because if your internet goes down, you still should be able to do stuff. I mean, if I lose my my connection to the world, it doesn't mean that my router isn't working. Doesn't mean I don't have power throughout my house. I want everything still to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe we're going to see, unfortunately, much more stupid things like the Snapchat glasses. We're going to see people. We're going to see people stabbing in the dark, throwing pasta against the wall, begging to get stupid wearables more popular. 2017, we're not going to have a single popular wearable be successful to any measurable degree. Just like at this year's 3D CES, 3D TVs are done. They are literally.
I knew that was going nowhere.
Of course, but to be honest, that's where the wearables are going. It's because
I remember 2 years ago at Costco, that was all 3D glass. Brand X 3D glasses for your Sony TV or.
Right. Well, and to be honest, that's where I think, because we're nowhere close to having wearables being functional, because the hardware is only a third of the picture. Not only do you need the softwares to make it work, but you also need the services to make it work.
Right. Uh-huh. And I think you hit it on the head, which which was kind of hitting on it early at the beginning of the show, discussing, the differences between Alexa and Google Home and Eric, with Google Home, you said it earlier today, too. It's not working as good as it used to.
Oh, you've noticed that, too, Brian?
I was asking it to play Today's Comedy on Pandora. I must have said it 17 times, clear as day, to do that. And even my phone picked it up, but Google Home would not do that. And I got into a discussion online with a woman. She was stating that Amazon's going to have touch screen displays with their next up and coming, you know, smart home or Echo device. And I'm like, well, that's great and all, but I really don't want to touch my Alexa device. You know, I want to speak to it. I want better, deeper integration where I could launch applications on my Fire TV, or I can, you know, tell it to do things that really matter, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. To put a display on a Alexa device is literally devolution. It is the wrong way. The
whole tits reason, on a pole.
Right. The whole reason Alexa was successful was you could do it while you were cooking. You could do it while you were doing other things. You didn't have to stop what you were doing. Now, I will say the only way I could see Alexa doing any kind of new hardware thing and being successful is, you remember Google I.O. last year? They had gesture control, like, in the air. I could see some kind of small gesture control thing just for Alexa. Like,
you asked, I built that about 15 years ago.
A kid?
What? No. I built it from the ground up. I was at SIGGRAPH in Los Angeles, and I built a display, and this was basic stamp 2 boards. I wrote networking protocol. I built sonars, and it would have virtual switches in space that would add beats and subtract beats from the drums, of the mechanical drums that we're playing. And
that's pretty cool.
So not quote unquote gesture control, but I could have done that based on like you were here and here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So to put a screen on Alexa is just stupid. I got to ask you that, Richard, did you do it in Cold Fusion?
No, it was, the networking was all on a basic stamp. It was a network basic stamps. I wrote the protocol for that, you know, over the serial pin, you know, TTL serial going over that.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah, because predictions, to me, one of the hardest things to do is to make only predictions in mini computers, only because it's a snowball, you know, coming down a mountain. A year and a half ago, it almost didn't exist, except for like the Raspberry Pi. And I'll say, to me, I have a disappointment of the year, too. My disappointment of the year is the banana stuff has not kept innovating and coming down in price. They literally just announced, I believe it was a banana M2 Ultra. Board.
Yeah, I saw Joe Hecht post on that, and that's something I haven't had a conversation with, because I love, or I have two Banana Pi devices. I've got the Pro, and I've got the M3, and I realized the Pro is being underutilized. I could use anything for that right now, because that's running Crash Plan off a SATA port, and there's no reason to do that. You can run it off the USB 2.0 or 3.0 port on any other device, so it's really being underutilized. Octopi, because I'm thinking Octoprint 3D printing. The Banana Pi M3 is, I just did a refresh on it. I loaded Debian, and it had, that was a port of Debian that was specifically for the GPU on board. And again, it's still running Plex, and it's running, Time Capsule. And the thing just runs great.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, just, and I was like, ooh, is there a new banana better device out there that I should spend money on? Because I like those two devices, really, really happy with them.
Yeah, and I really liked Banana because it was an open standard, open processor, completely open hardware. That was one of the things they kept pushing. This was open. And so it turns out we have the Banana Pi, we have the Banana Pro, we have the Banana M2, the Banana M3. It's actually, right there, three different manufacturers. Okay, that was one of the problems, which means with each hardware manufacturer, you get a slightly different level of quality, is what I'm going to say. And because of that, some people got bitter, some people got turned off. But they have not been innovating, as far as I'm concerned. Their boards are the exact same shape, the exact same size. Nothing's changed. They have a revved processor, slightly more RAM, and I think that's the only changes they've had. So to me, they're the disappointment of the year. I still love my Banana Pro. It works fantastic, but I just wish they would have kept it more.
Let's qualify that. I'm assuming you're saying disappointment based on where they were. They got a pretty good bar on some devices, and they just haven't raised it.
Yeah, they haven't kept up with the competition, is what I'll say. because we have a whole bunch of innovation, price reductions, form factor changing kind of thing, and they're just doing the same thing for the same about price.
Because I remember when you got the Odroid C2, I was like, oh, I want one of those. I want one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that is still one of the better home theater computer systems, mm-hmm. Because it is, you know, completely fanless, completely quiet. The Android that runs on it, it seems pretty well optimized. That's one of the things Hard Kernel, I think, did really well. And anybody complaining about it because it's an all-winner chip. And all-winner, aren't those people that did the thing a little while ago that had the root exploit in it? Okay, what doesn't have a root exploit in it or haven't had a root exploit in it, okay? Because even voting machines have had root exploits in them, okay? Cars have had root exploits in them. It happens. The biggest thing was they went back and fixed it. So, you know, to complain about all-winner because of that is, to me, peddly. Peddly is the word I use, because it is still a fantastic chip, fantastic price, and works really damn good. And it's more open than your Qualcomms or your Snapdragons or your Exynos or whatever other ARM processors that you get. So I'm still a fan of it. I still think it works great. They have a case, screen, Odroid C2 combination. The screen is only, I think it is 3.5 inches, but it's a touchscreen. You can get the whole thing for less than $60. This frigging Raspberry Pi official screen is $70 just for the screen. So I still love the Odroid. Maradroid is still the place to buy them. They're the official distributor of Odroids in the U.S., which means you literally get like 2-day shipping. It's hard to make any.
And I'll tell you, the shipping is a big deal to me because I'll go to Ali and I'll look and I'm like, I don't want to wait 4 weeks for that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's the whole reason why I liked, the whole reason I got two Odroids, the C1 and the C2, was because I knew this is a fair price. I'm literally paying like a buck more than ordering it straight from Korea, but I'm also getting fair shipping. Was like $3 for shipping, and I literally get it in 2 days. So I, you know, it's really hard to beat that. I'm trying to think any more calls. I will say mini PC related. I really hope. The idea of virtual reality backpacks becomes more popular because that's going to force people to take the higher end gaming computing and try to put it into a smaller form factor, which will help all mini computing as far as I'm concerned.
I got a prediction.
Okay.
We are going to see by the end of 2017 a absolute true mini PC device that's like our smartphones in a sense, where you could slide it into your laptop when you want to use it, pop it out, take it on the go, have it on your hand as a handheld device. When you get to the office, slide it into your desktop machine with a nice large display, and that will be your go-to machine.
I can't say no, I'll say, but for me, for that to become real, it's going to take two things.
You're already doing it, Dor.
Well, yeah, but
not in the true sense.
Because, like, what you're talking about is almost like the PCIe Express slot in the laptop, where you like slide the phone into there. It will take two things to happen. One is major manufacturer support, either HP, Dell, somebody like that doing this. And that, to me, the way you said it, is the only way I can see Windows Phone ever becoming competent and competitive again. Is if they do that, because that's the perfect business executive type system where they get to work, they take their phone because it already has all their contacts, already has all their emails, already has all their configurations, already has everything, and you slap it in that device, dock, laptop, or whatever, and there you go. And when you need to go, you literally just push a button on the device, it ejects it out. You don't need to leave your computer. And Windows is going to have to do something. Microsoft is going to have to do something on the mobile market and honestly on the device market in the enterprise. And that to me sounds like something that they could do right there.
Which doesn't make any sense is you have a small company like Kangaroo that's doing this right now. But, you know, there's a little gotchas on how they're doing it. But you have this multi-billion dollar company like Microsoft that could easily pull this off. With the amount of partnership that they have with hardware providers, easily pull this off and make it so spectacular. And I just can't imagine why we're not seeing that. But I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to make a prediction that we're going to
would it have a screen on it too, so that you could use it outside the outside of the office and home?
Oh yes, so absolutely.
So it might as well have a CDMA SIM chip or something in it, a GSM a SIM chip of whatever, yeah. and then okay, Microsoft's or whoever makes this fully functional piece of hardware is the new phone company.
Well, yeah. Well, and then here's the thing: when you put that phone into the device, it basically disables the mobile data chip, enables Ethernet through the device, and then can also use Active Directory, because that's the whole key. That Active Directory support, the Active Directory security, and then when you eject it from the device, basically it disconnects from AD, and you just use your mobile connection. And it could be on any carrier, but it's going to take Microsoft swinging a lot of money around, I think, to get this kind of thing done.
Well, that's a good prediction, Brian. I don't see why that, Richard, I don't see why that's not there.
Yeah, and I will say, Digital in the chat does say he can use USB 2 device to VGA for a second monitor with the laptop. Really? USB 2.0?
Well, I had 30 computers at one of my clients, and he wanted second monitors one day. I bought 30 of these USB 2.0 to VGA things.
I have to believe, though, they're Windows only.
But these were Windows, yes.
I would really love if you guys could send me links to them or in the Mattermost server or whatever, because I want to look at them because I want to see their Linux compatibility, because that could be really cool.
Yeah, I believe it was IOGear from Newegg, if I remember right.
Okay, because the only output I saw, I want to say it was USB 3.0. That was networking, maybe. The thing that Brian said, Kangaroo's doing it for basically an affordable price. If you stop and think about it, the laptop battery, the laptop screen, the laptop keyboard, the keyboard looked good. And then you have two fully functional computers, and it was $300. To me, that's almost a fair price. So there's no reason why Microsoft couldn't do this for $600-$700 kind of thing. Because, you know, phones now, you can get a really good phone, a decent phone, for sub $400.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Very interesting.
The one that I used to sell is out of end of life now. But now they do have other ones similar to it that I was going to show you, because they do have USB 3 to HDMI 4K external video card, USB 3 to DisplayPort 4K, and then they got another one that's USB 3.0 DVI HDMI VGA. So whatever kind of...
Send me the link.
Link is in the chat in the Mattermost. I can put it in the YouTube too.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, we're just going to keep going further. And okay, my other mini computer prediction is going to be an easy one. It's because I'm a Nintendo fanboy. The Nintendo Switch is a mini computer. No matter what you want to think about it, it is a handheld, ARM-based NVIDIA chip processor, handheld gaming device with a dedicated OS. Of course, it's a Nintendo thing. But the more chips they buy from NVIDIA, the more NVIDIA can keep implementing, the more NVIDIA can keep researching, the more NVIDIA can keep doing their next chip, their X2. And the more that they can keep prices reasonable is what I'm going to say. And I honestly, I'm going to say right now, it's going to release, I believe it is the end of March. For the entire 2017, I'm saying it right now, the Switch is going to sell more than all of the Xboxes, all of the PlayStations, all other game consoles, period.
Is there a price for the Switch already?
People are expecting it could be as low as like $280.
Yeah,
or as high as like $450.
Oh, I've been hearing under $300.
It's possible, is what they're saying, but they're really not sure. They're really not completely sure yet. January, they're going to have another event where they do expect to release prices and stuff, and more information about the hardware. But I'm going to tell you, I think no matter what, it's going to literally blow everything away. Because right now, 3DS XL, which is the closest thing you can compare it to, I want to say is still over $200.
Wow.
And that's not close to as good hardware spec wise kind of thing. But I'm going to go on a limb and I'm going to say it's going to easily outsell Xboxes, Xbox Scorpions, PlayStation Pro, PlayStation, whatever, because they all suck. They're all they are all hard to program for. That's what game development studios say. They're hard to program for. Nintendo, the last two consoles, has made it a point to make everything as easy to program for as possible. Now you can program for one device, quote unquote, and you have the portable market and the home console market. So I think it's going to be really good. And I think a lot of third-party devs are going to hop on well before the end of the year.
Now, it seems like they paid attention to what NVIDIA was doing with their NVIDIA Shield Android TV model. And even though that couldn't beat the Xbox One or the PlayStation in specs, but it could be in the same ring. You know, it wasn't as fast, but it was up there.
Yeah, and that's another, to me, disappointment of the year, is the Shield. Mm-hmm. How did the Shield not do as good as it should have done? I mean, it's really good hardware. It's really good hardware for the handheld unit and the Shield TV unit. I mean, they had a minimal Samsung Note 7-esque thing with the battery recall, but none exploded that people know of. They just sent out a recall, and they sent you out a brand new one for free when you traded it in, kind of thing. But hardware spec-wise, it was hard to beat those damn things. I mean, you were literally able to run genuine Xbox 360 and PS3 quality games on the handheld version of the of that device. And for some reason, it wasn't popular.
The end frame in the chat said he made a prediction, or he knows, he read maybe, that Microsoft will be making Windows 10 ARM compatible sometime this year.
Oh, already is. Already is. I mean, I can already buy from
without
China.
A UI, right?
No. I can already buy from China Windows 10 ARM-based hardware. It just sucks. It's not... it isn't optimized, and that's one of the things. Yeah, before May, they're going to go deep in with getting completely compatible.
So this won't be a RT redo.
Oh, no. And supposedly, it's going to allow you to install anything via emulation.
Wow.
Well, I know, but, you know, there's certain things that you're going to go to install on an ARM device via emulation, and it ain't going to run like you want.
How about
it
viruses? Can you install them via emulation?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. That's the one thing that really scares me about any Windows-type device. Like the GPD Win, the little handheld Windows device. What happens if you get that thing infected? I mean, what are you going to do? Mm. You know? Honestly, I do expect Intel and Microsoft to make extreme headway on mini computing because they don't like the money that they're not getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just try to stop and think. Oh, and I do think stuff like drones, quadcopters, are going to go ba-frigging-listic. I think we're going to see genuine on network TV weekly or bi-weekly shows dedicated to drone racing or, you know, quadcopter racing, you know, first-person view leagues, because I'm going to tell you right now, sometimes when I watch those things, they're friggin' awesome.
They are awesome.
And they're perfect for advertisements. I mean, all around the track, you can have, you know, whatever, billboards up right there. It's perfect. It's, like, made for it. The pilots can, just like the NASCAR drivers, have jackets with all these companies shoot all over it. It's, to me, perfect marriage for, you know, the taking kind of thing. So I do think that kind of market's going to extremely take off.
They need to somehow take it out of the geek realm and bring it into mainstream.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking make it more geeky and have install some kind of lasers to shoot each other down.
Lasers.
Anything with lasers.
So what you're saying is battle bots meets drone
racing. Rubin's racing, man, or shooting. Yeah.
Battle bots. I remember that show.
It's back on again. And it's like time stopped. The battle bots are the exact same ones they pulled out of the closet. There's no difference. You would think in 10 years it would have evolved. No, these are exactly the same battle bots. That we all
added
love.
A laser.
They could have nothing. I don't know. I was surprised to see how they were had not morphed into something nicer or better.
Ow.
Right. And then I want to. I guess
it's fine.
That's okay. I'm muted on the pro show. Okay, here's one of the things that. Okay, here's one of the. It's not even a prediction because it's not a prediction. It just happened. I don't expect any of you guys to know the name George Hotz. Anyone?
Well, I was listening to Voxer earlier. So.
Okay. George Hotz, born 1989 in America. He's American. He was the first guy to jailbreak the iPhone ever.
Oh, ever. Yeah, okay.
He went on public, he went on national television and showed people how to do it, literally, on NBC Nightly News. They had him with Tom Brokaw or whatever on. He's also the guy that hacked the PlayStation 4 and put all the code out there and showed everyone how to put Linux on your PS4. He's done one or two other things, including, I believe it was a Samsung Galaxy S5. When they announced it, they said, thanks to Knox, this is a truly unhackable phone.
Mm, yeah.
Literally less than 24 hours after the phone was released, he released Talroot, which enabled you to bypass Knox and completely root the device. George Hotz is a American. He is truly American in the sense of he's, you know, bucking everything. He's doing everything his way. He's doing it the way he wants to do. And he's a little bit touched. You know, Tesla used to love a pigeon. Okay. Literally. Tesla,
right. Nikolai wanted, Tesla.
Yeah, Nikolai Tesla wanted to marry a pigeon, okay? But he was gifted and really smart.
He probably could get away with
it. He probably could get away with it. And in fact, you couldn't say anything bad about it, or else you would trigger a certain group of people. George Hotz is, to me, the equivalent type of acumen, type of intelligence, type of approach to things. He got backers like maybe a year ago. He started up a company called Comma AI. And if you watch Silicon Valley on HBO, I think he named the company as a homage to the three commas from Silicon Valley. When you're a billionaire, you're part of the three comma club. And he called the company Comma AI. Comma AI automated driving vehicles. Okay. He just released all of the source code. Okay. Let me tell you something. South African guy, Elon Musk, who loses more money than maybe any businessman in the history of the world.
Yes.
He will not open source his code. Okay. George Hotz said his goal is to crush Tesla, to crush Elon Musk and send him back to South Africa, begging for forgiveness. Okay? He just released the entirety of his AI for his automated system. He said now he needs data. He is saying by the end of next year, he wants to be able to sell less than $1,000 devices to anybody. You hook up ODB, I believe it's called ODB, ODB2, mm-hmm. port, yeah. whatever, and like one or two other things to your device. You set your camera and a mount on your phone on the mount.
It's OBD.
OBD. And then you have a quote-unquote self-driving car. I implore people, go on YouTube, look for Comma AI, look for George Hotz. Very interesting fellow to me. His approach for automated driving is the correct approach, and Tesla is doing it wrong. Volvo is doing it wrong. BMW is doing it wrong. Every other company, to me, they're doing the logic-based part of automated driving wrong, and he's doing it right. And the fact that he's just a rebel. I mean, if this was the 50s, he would have his hair full of grease and wearing a jean and wearing a leather jacket. At least in my mind, I don't know. So I think he's going to become either well-loved, well-respected, or he's going to be killed in the next year. Because I think he's going to either make a lot of people mad, hurt a lot of people's economic foundations, or he's going to do something that's really cool and really smart that a lot of people like.
I know this guy. I've seen this guy before.
Mm-hmm. The other name that is going to become, I think, even more important next year, Moxie Marlinspike. Anybody who thrives on security or privacy, you should already know the name Moxie Marlinspike, and you should already be using stuff like his Signal SMS client on Android. Basically, there is nothing on the planet more secure than Moxie Marlinspike code, period. I think breaches are going to go out the wazoo, and mini computers ain't going to help us next year. You know, I don't know. I don't have anything else to try to predict, because it's going to be ugly.
Already.
I predict we're going to have a genuine UFO.
There you go.
UFO sighting.
All these big supermoons we've been having, they're just piling up behind it. We can't quite see it.
Okay, last prediction. I'm going to have a 3D printer.
Yay. I hope period. I hope one of these comes true then.
Yeah, and not the UFOs, but that's just me.
I like UFOs.
Okay, do you guys have anything else you want to throw in?
One more from the chat room. Google revealed Android Things Brillo yesterday, and he said,
"Yeah,
the end frame says this will be big for many PCs and IoT boards."
Oh yes, I think about Brillo.
I think it can be, but it's going to be confusing. Well, that's the thing. Now no longer is it called Brillo; it's called Android Things. I do think there's a niche, if you will. There's an avenue because a lot of Internet of Things can be started from an Android device. And the number of Android devices they're selling is ridiculous. So if they exclude Android, if they exclude iOS, hypothetically, and they just have it, they just really focus on Android devices, that's a huge market.
Yeah.
So, you know, Android to Android communications may be better, maybe easier, maybe easy to program for. I don't know. Could be huge. Could be big. I don't know. Could be bigger than Kanye. I don't know. But it's definitely one of those things we're going to have to keep our eye out because Google is the one company that kind of catches me off guard with stuff. I'm still waiting for, though, Andromeda OS.
Yeah.
Shaking my fist at you, Google. Where's this Chrome Android combination OS you've been teasing?
I'm going to make a prediction that we see Andromeda in 2017. Mainstream.
I think we need to predict what Google's going to retire next year.
Yeah, probably everything we love.
It better not be FeedBurner. I'll drive my car right through their office, front of their office.
Yeah, everybody has to go to Google Music if they want to.
It could be Google Voice.
They're going to kill a lot. Knowing them, they're going to kill a lot. Somebody said, who worked for Google said, we've ceased all of our Google Car stuff.
Well, they just sold it off to another company.
There you go. Yeah. So they're not doing that anymore.
So Google, was it Android Auto? No, they're not.
No. The self-driving. Is that what we're talking about? Little self-driving car.
Panda car. Koala car. I think it is.
Whatever it was. Yeah.
So they're not doing that any longer.
Nope.
They'll leave it up to Apple.
Some other company who was already into self-driving cars got that from them.
Son of a gun. Well, they still have ABC. ABC's doing some research work as well, too.
You mean Alphabet?
Alphabet, I'm sorry.
Now, didn't they, the team that was doing Nest, isn't that pretty much, or are those guys out? Because I think there were some layoffs, right?
Most of the team is gone. I think only a couple of the key people are left behind. And supposedly they have to just wait for their contract to expire, then they're going to leave as well. Nest is one of those things I think has to die.
That's so sad.
Well, I'll just say this. Speaking to the people I know who's in HVAC for 30 plus years, he said it's hysterical how many people hop on programmable thermostats. This was 20 years ago. He said anybody would know if you set your thermostat to a reasonable degree and never touch it, it cost you less money. He said going up and down, it's like acceleration. When you accelerate a car, you use a lot more gas than you do maintaining speed.
You have no idea how smart I am. And so I'm thinking I know everything and just not, you know, HVAC and temperature. So when I was working remote here in Florida in the summer, I'd leave the AC off. I'd have the fan going in my office. And then if it rained, like we'd get these, Florida, it's either full on torrential downpour or it's sunny.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. So I've got cold water running over the coils on the condenser outside. I'll turn the AC on now during the rain pour. And exactly what Dor said. Didn't matter how smart I thought I was. Didn't matter how smart I managed it. Didn't matter that I sweat my noogies off all day long from 9 to 5. Didn't turn the AC on until my wife came home. I didn't save any money. And I was just horrifically uncomfortable.
Yeah, so to have a Nest is a cool factor. Hey, look what I got. But if anyone actually does any kind of actually looking at their bill and actually does A-B comparisons, they will see they are always spending more money every time. It's the law of thermodynamics. To change temperature costs a lot more than to maintain temperature. And there was something else. Oh, yeah, my one buddy, Rich, okay, you'll get this. My one buddy swore, you take a hose, you have the hose going out to your AC unit, you have PVC piping making a frame around the unit, and you have it spritz water off cost you little pennies, pennies if that a day, pennies a day.
But the, right, so but that's evaporative cooling.
Many people would
right.
say mist. Doors has spritz, water all spritz. Over it.
Well, I'm Jewish, I guess. I don't know. A mist. But then that mist would cool down stuff enough, he swore, to be cost beneficial.
He is partially correct. So in Florida, because we have nearly 100% humidity all the time, that would never work because the vapor pressure isn't high enough. Now, in places like Texas, they use evaporative coolers, and that's how they do the AC there. So it really depends on a low humidity to get that differential for an evaporative cooler device to work.
Gotcha. I told him, I said, it sounds plausible, but I don't know nothing.
Do you guys, we all live in different parts of the country. Do any of you guys have geothermal heating and cooling around your house or area?
No. You typically have to live far north for that. Like, for instance, in Canada, anywhere north of the border, it's almost cost-effective to do that.
A lot of people are doing it here. Because the
Maine.
The ground, if you go like 6 feet underground, is around 50 degrees.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah. This is another thermodynamic exchange. You basically, underneath your house, you bore out literally holes. Long, long holes. The longer, typically, the better. And then you basically pump water through the holes back up like a radiator, and you basically get the heat and the warmth from down there to come up here to power
devices. And the cooling, too, in the summer, because it's 50 down there also in the summer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The temperature, it is, the deeper you go, it basically doesn't change or changes slower. Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting stuff.
So it's a heat pump, depends on the efficiency of the heat pump, and there have been, somebody told me some years ago that there was an advance in like two-stage heat pumps, and you could take 50-degree water and make your house 70 degrees from it.
Wow.
So it's the same thing air conditioning, because air conditioner is a heat pump. And basically, if you're air conditioning your home, you're taking the heat in it and putting it outside, which is kind of tough to do. You know, in the summer, it might be 100 degrees outside, and you want it 70 degrees inside. So moving that heat out is a tough thing. Now, my hot tub has a heat pump, but what that means is when it's like 70 degrees and below out, I can't heat my hot tub. When it's mid-80s and higher, I can heat my hot tub.
Ah, okay.
And I'll take so if it's mid-80s, I'll pump my hot tub up to like 106 degrees. Is it 104? I think 104 is the top temp. I'll get it up to 104 degrees on, you know, mid-80 degree weather.
Gotcha.
So it is possible, like in Maine, with 50 degree water to heat your house to like 70 degrees with, I think, if I'm correct, two-stage heat pump.
Wow.
Gotcha. Hey, we've been going for well over an hour now, guys.
Do you have any manual fruit peelers? I'm just going to ask you about weird.
Yes.
We take it away from mini PC. We might as well go way away, you know.
Well, it's a mini it's a mini machine. My wife has a little device. You punch an apple onto it through the core, so it's a core, and then you put it in the thing, and then you twist the handle, and it peels, but it also cores, and it also slices at the same time. So the one movement, you core the apple, you peel it, and you slice it into thin slices. That's how she makes apple pies. I tried to convince her for Thanksgiving dinner. That's how you should peel the potatoes. She bought two bags of potatoes. She sat there for like 2.5 hours up in front of the sink peeling potatoes by hand. She said, aren't you going to help? I said, pull out the peeler, and I'll help. So she sat there for 2 hours peeling potatoes by hand.
She didn't want a dollar blade on some stinking potatoes or something.
I'll buy her a new one of those things. How easy it is. Man, I don't know that, yeah. Yeah, that was too much like work. I don't get paid for that.
Huh. I'd at least give it a try. She could have snuck one away from her, went upstairs with the peeler real quick.
No, the peeler was right next to her.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm calling it a show. I want to thank everyone for their support. Richard, I want to thank you for coming out. Richard is typically on Tilts, the Linux Link Tech Show, over at tilts.something. .org.com.gov.
.org.
.co.uk. Do you have anything else you want to end with here, Richard?
No, thanks for having me on. I always enjoy the show, and I enjoy, you know, our regular conversations, so it's always nice to share that with other people.
Agree. Brian, do you have anything you want to end off with?
No. Well, you know what? I actually learned a new phrase word for my Google Home. Instead of saying, okay, you know what, I just say, hey, Google, listen to some music. And it starts playing.
Yeah, well, hey, Google's nice, so your phone doesn't pick it up along with your home.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. But other than that, I want to wish everyone a merry, merry Christmas and a happy new year and happy Hanukkah and a happy holiday if you're not the one that believes in Christ.
Eric, do you have anything you want to end
with?
I want to
thank the listeners for hanging out with us this year, and I want to thank you guys for being on the show, and all three of you. It's nice to hang out with some professionals who understand this stuff. I'm just here to, you know, bring topics up that have nothing to do with mini PCs and try to crash your show, but you guys got it together, so I can't really do too bad.
Do you have any bread makers, Eric?
No, we're gluten-free here, so we sold the bread maker upon diagnosis.
What's this wheat stuff?
Not me. No.
That's what I'm saying. More bread for you?
Yeah, then I'm going to have to make it, so. No, you know, if you got it, you know, I bought almost a 100-year-old coffee grinder at a stay sale.
That's fantastic, Eric. I want to thank everyone for their support. If you can, go to podnest.com/Amazon. If you want to directly support us, you can go to podnest.com. There's a support link right there. I know there's something I was trying to be really smart with ending with, but I can't think of it. Thank everyone for their support, and I will see everyone in about a week.